Welcome to What in God's Name. He's Chris Owen.
And she's Brown Berry Girl.
Okay, Ginger Boy, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much.
Good to be with you again, Chris.
As always, Shayna.
As always.
Welcome to What in God's Name, as Shayna says. For those of you who are new to us, our audience keeps growing, and so we want to pause and do a little reset at the beginning of each show to help our new listeners get connected to what's going on here. Shayna and I are
What is going on here, Chris?
Good question, Shayna. Shayna and I look at current events and culture from a theological and philosophical point of view. One of the things that means is that we don't break news, but we break it down, which is not a phrase that I invented. I stole it happily from somewhere else. But it's so true. We want to slow things down on What in God's Name and reflect and be more reflective, because certainly that doesn't happen a lot in our culture. And Shayna, the other thing is, often the lens that people use to try to understand what's going on in our society today, partisan political lens, oftentimes we're so focused on money and material in this culture that economic lenses are often used. There's a whole wealth of ancient wisdom in theology and philosophy that
needs to be resurrected.
So totally helpful for us to get at deeper questions.
Absolutely.
We are Christians, although Shayna is Christian Plus, which, if you want to know what that means, listen to last week's
show. In no way it attempts to put myself aside as a super Christian, but I am.
In addition to,
I am Christocentric, but not Christo exclusive.
I love that phrase. So, yes, we have that perspective, and we are lovers of the world's religions, and we are lovers of thinking not just theologically, but with a moral lens as well.
Yeah.
Thinking ethically and morally. Yeah. Our core values.
Yeah.
Be curious.
Go deep.
I love that. Be curious.
Go deep.
And shine light. As I say, our audience is growing, and so we invite you to help us continue to grow our audience. We want to widen the circle of the conversation. Shayna, I've had, and I wish we could think of better ways to continuing the conversation, but I have wonderful conversations with some of our listeners via email that are not public. So you and I need to think more about how we continue
and we can do a live radio show, we can have people call in. But right now we've got to rely on our social media, our Facebook page, and our email. So, yeah. But listeners, please do reach out to us with any questions or thoughts you may have, because while Chris and I enjoy talking to one another, we most definitely enjoy talking to you.
One of the most amazing conversations that we've had recently is with a group of folks at a congregational church in Jaffrey, New Hampshire.
United Church of Jaffrey, yes.
The United Church of Jaffrey. And we're going to play that conversation for you, and that will take up the bulk of this show. But Shayna and I wanted to give you a little bit of context on this conversation first. What this church did was respond to the mass shootings that happened. It was really triggered, pardon the pun in this context, by the shootings that happened really close to one another.
In El Paso, Texas, Dayton, Ohio.
And so it was out of that moment that the United Church of Jaffrey engaged in a project. They just felt like they had to do something. And we will hear that story from their minister, Mark Koyama. That's part of the conversation that we had with them, how that project came to be. And he describes what it is. And then Shayna and I followed up with conversations with some of the participants in the project, and they shared their reflections on being part of that project.
One of the things I would ask our listeners to do is to really listen for the testimony of those who participated in this project with an ear towards what makes this a faithful response. Because a lot of people are doing a lot of great work to resist gun violence in America. and to counter the terrorism of gun violence in America. But this is a particular response that was grounded in faith. And I think every single person who speaks to it did a beautiful job articulating that. There is a difference. There is a difference between secular responses and faithful responses. And I think for all of us, it pays to know what that is so that we're able to choose when we do which. Chris and I have spoken before in the past about faithful activism versus faithful witness. And I think this project was a really nice blend of the two. I don't want to give anything away, but I'll tell you, to drive up on the visual was, I don't know what your response to it, Chris, was. I think my heart may have stopped beating in my chest for a few beats.
No question, Shana. 250 small crosses filling a church front yard is a powerful image. To see that image, go to our website, whatingods.com, or on our Facebook page, at whatingods, or our Instagram, at whatingods. Here's our conversation, starting with the minister, Mark Koyama. So, Mark, I have to say, when I drove up here, I haven't been past the church yet, and I saw the crosses. It's a powerful visual to see all those crosses lined up there. So I was hoping that you could give our listeners some context as to what the project is and how it came about.
Well, thank you, Chris. That's exactly the intention of the installation that we did in front of the church. The idea for the project came very much out of the energy of the church. There was the Sunday directly after the kind of the dual shootings, the Dayton and the El Paso shootings, when there was a great deal of frustration expressed during our church service, because as you recall, the Dayton shooting was late, I think it was early Sunday morning, right? It was like 1 a.m. on Sunday morning. So it was fresh news on top of what had already happened in El Paso. And so there was this sense of, which I think hit the entire country, of kind of this exponential kind of growth of this problem expressed in the immediacy of these two events happening close together. And so there was a great deal of frustration that was expressed during our service, during our prayers. Something must be done. And so we prayed about it, as we always do. And then the next day, our chat room for our church exploded, essentially. People really started expressing frustration. And there was, you know, some all caps email saying, we must do something. And so I said, let's have a meeting. So I called an impromptu meeting of the church. And we just started talking about this. What can a small church like this possibly do? There had been some emails that had been sent around, and one of the emails had included a kind of a sublink to another article that was an article about a church that had a number of years ago, I think it was a church on Long Island, a number of years ago had put white crosses on their lawn, not to represent victims, but to represent locations of places where mass shootings had taken place. And I said, well, so we had a fairly long discussion, and then I said, well, may I make a suggestion? And I said, well, how about this? How about we do this? Install crosses on the front lawn that represent each of the victims of the mass shootings for 2019. At the time of the idea, there were 286 people who had died, and that was in mid-July. But by the time we actually did the installation, there were almost 350. So as you can see, that this was an effort that really was harnessing the energy from the pews. We did some research, of course, immediately on Amazon to see if we could buy the crosses, and they were either incredibly expensive or too small or something. And so what then happened was this great thing, which was that it became this community effort to create the crosses and to put them together, to paint them, to rip them, and to do all the build a jig and do all the necessary work. It was just like, so that there was a real beauty to that.
I'm curious about your theological reflections mm-hmm. on your response. Mm. Like, where have you discerned the presence of God in how the congregation responded, and what is the theological message, as you understand it, of those crosses being out there?
Yeah. I've done some thinking about this, obviously, and one of the remarkable things that I think that happened with this was that in the week before the installation ritual that we had designed, in my mind I was kind of casting about, waiting for kind of the Holy Spirit to kind of give me some sense of like how I could design the liturgy in such a way that it would be particularly meaningful. There was really one thing that I knew, it was the one thing, and that was that I wanted to run the whole thing as if it was one long prayer. That I wanted to bring this idea of physical action and prayer together in this liturgy. So I knew that people would be on their knees. They'd be banging these things in the ground, that's a physical action. And that was my one kind of intuition for this liturgy. And so, you know, I did this whole elaborate thing where I set up the PA and out in front of the church, and I pulled a pulpit out there and set up the microphones and put them all out there and invited all the clergy to pray and do all these things. But really, when it came down to it, what was really the most moving thing was just the bare bones basic element of the liturgy, which was that you just had people on their knees, like banging these things into the ground, and that it took time to do that. Like, you couldn't rush it. You couldn't, like, this wasn't something that we could do efficiently. It was something that took time, and it was necessary that it took time. And the more time that it took, the more we realized that what we were doing was we were actually acknowledging the lives that were lost when we were putting those crosses in the ground. So that it wasn't just this symbol, it wasn't just this piece of wood, it wasn't just this kind of fun thing that we're doing together. It became this more real enactment of this profound loss that we have had and the senselessness of it in our country.
I'm struck by the contrast of the time it took you all to erect this thing and engage in the ritual versus the time it took to take everyone out. Because, of course, right. Shooting somebody with a semi-automatic weapon can happen, you know, like within seconds, numbers of people, as we now know, can be dropped.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always looking at that differences in what it means when people of faith engage in public witness versus secular groups engaging in public witness, because they're very different. But I'm wondering if you have a sense. I mean, there's certainly a number of secular organizations have taken actions to shed light on this travesty, this mm-hmm. pandemic that's impacting our nation. There's something very different in what you did. I don't know if that's something you've given any thought to, or something you'd care to just offer us a brief reflection on. Or,
well, I think in a sense, communities of faith, because we pray, because we involve ourselves in liturgy weekly, we have at least some practice in trying to kind of bring our attention back to something of significance and importance, so that we're not the raccoon seeing the shiny object or the crow seeing the shiny object. We're at least have some training in bringing our attention back to what we deem to be of the greatest importance, of ultimate value, as Tillich would say. So I hope, my hope is at least that when we involve ourselves in a ritual practice, that we're not only trying to reflect and trying to think about it, but that we're also centering ourselves to that recognition of something that has extraordinary importance and value. And, you know, communities of faith don't have any monopoly on these things, obviously. We all reflect. We all have capacities to focus. Perhaps we just have a weekly practice of doing so.
Whether or not we all use them is another matter.
Right. You know, you mentioned earlier the way the contrast between like the speed of the automatic, the semi-automatic weapon versus the slowness of liturgy, the immediacy of death versus, you know, the eternity of being dead, right? And I found myself spending a lot of time thinking about the fact that the Dayton shooter was immobilized. He was killed within 30 seconds, and within 30 seconds, he was still able to kill 9 people. I almost feel like you can hardly even call that a gun anymore. It seems like something else. It seems like some other kind of, like, you know, when the people who framed the Second Amendment were writing, you know, it took 40 seconds to reload your musket, you know. If you shot at somebody, you'd have to spend 40 seconds reloading before you could take a second shot. But now it's like you don't even have a chance. There's no chance.
And you don't have to be able to shoot well.
Yeah.
You simply need to be able to point it at an area where there's a dense population of people and just start spraying.
Yeah.
And you're going to kill some people and you're going to wound others, but you're going to take a bunch of people down.
Next up is a member of the church, Tina O'Neill. I want to give you, our listeners, a heads up. You will hear a lawnmower later on in this conversation. I invite you to think of this as a feature, not a bug. Think of it as the What in God's Name homage to the sounds of summer as summer fades and fall takes over. We've heard a little bit of the background of this project from Mark. Just say your name, if you would, and tell us a little bit about your involvement in the project.
Okay, I'm Tina. I'm a member of this church. I'm a deacon. This project I have been very passionate about. A couple of emails went out with sermons from other ministers. One of them that really struck me was the minister that said, we think and pray, and now we need to think, pray, and do. And I knew then that I wanted to be a part of whatever we were going to do to recognize all of this horror in our country.
It sounds like you had a, as we say in church world, a kind of a come to Jesus moment when you read that pastor's words, we think and pray, now we need to think, pray, and do. And something snapped for you. But the issue of gun violence it's been around for a very long time. Was there a straw that broke the camel's back? What do you think finally
what
moved
really
you?
What really kind of woke me up was, you know, people being afraid to go into theaters and bars and schools, and do I fear for my grandkids in a small town like this? Absolutely. But I'm not afraid to go into these places. What I'm most afraid of is turning on the TV in the morning and learning where it happened again. That's my fear.
Well, and the difference also being, those of us gathered in this room did not grow up in a culture of mass shooting where younger children have grown up in that culture of mass shooting. So for them, because I've heard my niece express the same thing, she doesn't go to movie theaters. She doesn't like to be in places where there are big crowds. And that's just part of what she's grown up in. So she doesn't even have another notion to ground herself into, that for many, 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 many years, we went to theaters, we went to rock concerts, we went to schools, and nobody was taken out, but they don't have that, they lack that balance.
Right, you know, and my younger grandchildren asked me one day, are we safe in our school? I says, you are as safe as the school can possibly make you. And I said, they will do everything in their power to keep you safe.
Shana and I did a show last spring on what we've called the culture of fear. It wasn't focused at all on gun violence. It's simply my observation, our observation of how much fear there is out in the world. So I'm curious about what the answer is to that, or what is a response to fear? And your story of your grandchildren is telling, because they feel something, right? Because they come to you with that question, am I safe in my school? So that there's something in the air that they're picking up on, their children, so of course. And I ask myself, what is the faithful response to a culture of fear?
To make a stand wherever they can, in whatever way they can, to alleviate the fear in themselves and in others. They go to this church. They know about the project. They knew what it meant. They had conversations with me, and, you know, I try as best I can to alleviate their fear.
I liked how you talked about, I mean, as I imagine this project, I imagine the feeling of togetherness, of solidarity one with another, to do something, and that in and of itself, that reduces fear. So as I was driving over here, I was thinking about one of the core values of our show is be curious. And one way of framing curiosity is to complete the sentence that begins with, I wonder. I wonder if. I wonder what would happen. I wonder about. So my last question for you is, with regards to this epidemic, this disaster of gun violence in our country, this culture of fear, how might you finish the sentence, I wonder?
I wonder how many people are going to keep this in motion. I sent out an email to a lot of my friends saying, you know, do something, bring it to your church, you know, write letters to your congresspeople, you know, and no matter what goes on in this country, I am proud to be an American. And I am even more proud to be a member of this church.
So that was part one of our conversation with the folks at the United Church of Jaffrey. We're going to hear part two of this conversation on our next show. Shane, it was just so fascinating and so inspiring to hear level of this conversation with these folks.
I was very inspired.
Be curious, Shana.
Go deep, Chris.
And shine the light. Thank you again, everyone, for joining us for today's show. And keep the conversation going. We, again, as I said at the beginning of the show, we're looking for ways to be in conversation, because that's the way that we can exercise our curiosity and exercise the ability to go deep. So be in touch with us. You can contact us on email. We're on Facebook. And, of course, our website, whatingods.com.
WHATINGODS.com.
Shana, it's great to see you as always.
Good to see you, Chris.
See you next time.
Absolutely.